Welcome to Decodify, SIPC's podcast in current and controversial issues in law and technology, brought to you by the Samuelson Glushko Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, housed at the Centre for Law, Technology and Society at the University of Ottawa in Canada. My name is Kent Muhort. I'm here today with Tamir Israel, and we're going to talk to you about online surveillance. So to start off, I've been hearing a lot in the news lately about lawful access legislation. Tamir, could you start off by just telling me a bit about what this is all about?
Sure. The lawful access set of laws are the government's attempt to bring surveillance capabilities into the 21st century. It's a set of legislation that basically gives the police and the various other state agencies a whole bunch of new powers to watch and track what people are doing online.
Okay, so I think the government has tried to introduce this legislation before. What happened to that?
Right. So this will be the third time that this particular government introduces this legislation. Various other versions of it have appeared in the past and have been introduced by other governments. There was a cybercrime treaty signed about 10 to 12 years ago by various countries, including Canada, that forms the basis of some of this legislation. So the government, this isn't the attempt to bring, to update the state's surveillance, online surveillance capacity is not new. However, none of these past attempts to introduce these bills ever made it to made it in front of a parliamentary committee, where parliamentary committees is typically where this type of legislation gets really dissected and its more problematic aspects get fixed. So what's happening now is the government has promised to push through these bills within on a very tight time frame, within 100 days of Parliament sitting, and is part of this larger package of various crime legislation. So there's a concern now that after waiting, 5-6 years to really push this, to put this legislation through in a very careful and considered way, the government is suddenly trying to ram it through really quickly, and that we're going to get a set of really bad legislation put in place that hasn't really been carefully studied and to the detriment of all of us.
Yeah, from what I've seen of the bills, it looks like so there's some serious implications for our civil rights. So certainly, I hope that the government will at least slow down on it and make sure we get it right. So let's just delve into the substance a bit more. So I mean, it's primarily aimed at giving police further tools to get information on crimes that have some relation to the internet and new communication technologies. Is that?
I mean, to some extent, yes. But the basic premise is that we have these new communication tools out there, and criminals are going to use them just as everyone else. So we would actually it would have made sense, I think, to some extent, to limit some of these new powers to high tech crimes, like you have online child pornography rings. If these powers were limited to investigating if it were only applied in investigations of these new high tech crimes, that would be a more maybe tailored response to the new communications medium. But these are blanket powers that would just let the law enforcement watch what everybody is doing online at all times, regardless of whether it's a high-tech offense, a low-tech offense, a serious offense, a traffic violation, or whatever.
Okay, so for just about anything. So my understanding is right now how the current law works. Let's say I received a threatening email from somebody. I could, if a police officer were to investigate that email, he could see my email address, the email address of the person that sent it, perhaps their IP address. Now he'd need further investigation to actually find out who that is. So I think right now he could bring the current evidence he has to a judge and ask for a warrant, and then from the internet service provider would be able to tie that IP address to the physical address. Now it seems to me the police officer can already do that. He can go to the judge and get a warrant. So what's this legislation going to do? How's it going to change that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think this is part of the problem that a lot of people in civil society have with this legislation. It's the existing powers do allow police to investigate these offenses that have or anything that really has a high tech communicative component these days. So in your email example, what the law currently requires is that the law enforcement have a reason to suspect that the information that they're asking the judge to give them access to will aid and will in some way assist their investigation of a crime, right? So in most scenarios, take your scenario with the email. You have a threatening email, so if it meets the level of harassment or whatever that you is required for the criminal for a criminal offense and a police investigation, you already know that an offense has happened there. So there's no question that the information will be useful. So in that scenario, a law enforcement agent is not going to have a problem getting a warrant to force the internet service provider or the email service provider to identify who that person is attached to that email. Under the new legislation, it takes away the need for police to ask for basically, instead of having to go to a judge to say, can I get an order saying that I can get this person's name and address attached to this anonymous email, police can just go directly to the internet service provider and say, they don't need to tell them, we're investigating, a harassing email. Or even that, we're investigating a crime or anything. They just need to go to the email service provider and say, tell us who this is. So in your scenario that you're talking about, won't really be affected by this new set of powers in the sense that the police could have gotten, the what they needed to investigate that crime, without the new powers that are being offered. But what it does open the door to is a whole bunch of other investigations where there's no real reason to think that the information will even be useful. So the police can just go and collect, just grab a list of, IP addresses or email addresses and attached to anonymous people making comments online and without the need to actually connect it to any type of suspicion that any of these people have done anything wrong, start finding out who they are, start analyzing what they're doing online, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, like for the warrant scenario that I was talking about earlier, I think the minimum threshold is usually that the police officer has to have reasonable grounds to suspect someone of a crime. It sounds like with this new legislation, they won't even need that minimum standard. Okay, so we're mostly talking about the subscriber information. So that's when a police officer, other law enforcement officer, wants to get certain information from an internet service provider, or I think it's more wide actually, a telecommunications service provider. But what about the surveillance parts of this legislation? So aside from subscriber information, what kind of surveillance abilities is this going to add to law enforcement?
So the legislation is it's drafted in a very subtle way, which is why it has a lot of people concerned. It basically sets a lot of it defines a lot of new powers at various stages of the a lot of powers that let you get different classes of online data at various and it basically lowers the level that you would normally need to get that information in a number of ways. So we're talking about this, for the subscriber data, right now police need a warrant to get that. And by subscriber data, we mean like an IP address, someone's name attached to an anonymous online account, email address.
How about geolocation information from?
Yeah. So, right. So for customer name and information data, police won't require. For customer name and information data, there's no standard at all. So police can just get that as long for any reason at all without any need to without meeting any need to prove that there is a reason to think anybody's done anything wrong with it, the information will be useful. For a host of other data, a slightly higher standard, but still a pretty low one, is put in place, which is the it's a mere suspicion standard, which means that instead of so normally police so it means that as long as police can convince a judge that there's this you know sort of nagging suspicion that the information will be useful in some way, they can get it. And that and then the higher normal standard, the one that applies right now, is this a reasonable belief. It's a higher evidentiary standard, meaning that you have to actually prove that you have to have some concrete proof to show that this information will be useful before you are able to get it. So that the way that these tiers of standards are laid out in this legislation, what underpins the lower standards that are put in place for various types of information is the assumption that that the information is less private. So it's people don't really expect it to be protected against the state because it's less private, it's less sensitive. But when you look at what these standards are attached to, that's just not really borne out. So for example, when you're talking about the customer name and information data, what's attached to that, I mean, you're not just getting someone's name or email address. Online anonymous activities or anonymity is the key to a lot of online or a lot of really sensitive online activity. So if you think about political blogs, political commentary, people talk about medical information online anonymously sometimes. Being able to identify online speakers at will without it's basically going to be the key to a lot of very very sensitive online information. So that we feel like the assumption underpinning that really low standard there is not very justified. Same for the mere suspicion standard, which is the middle standard, which is used in a number of places in under this legislation. So information like the legislation assumes that information like your location is not very sensitive, as long as a third party like is holding it. Information like your social network, like who you interact with online, that's not very sensitive information. So under that assumption, police are able to get information like that at a discount where. All they need to demonstrate is there's this sort of slight suspicion the information might be useful, whereas historically they would have had to bring in much robust information. And of course online, that in a pre-internet world that might have made sense, location, your credit card company might have a very sort of slight picture of where you were at a given time because they can see that you bought something here or you bought something there. But in the internet world, and particularly more recent internet world, where every smartphone has a GPS built into it that's recording and tracking your every movement everywhere you go, and a record of that is being held by either Apple or Google, as well as your internet service provider.
Yeah, basically anyone with a smartphone has a live tracking device walking around right on them, that if police can tap into that, they could basically see where you are at any time. That's
absolutely, and not just where you are at any time. With this lower suspicion standard and the lack of a requirement to have very specific, proof that this information about this individual is going to be useful, it opens up the door to a broader mass surveillance, in the sense that, we can find out where, let's just map out where everybody was in the city when this crime occurred, and we'll see who went where and what. So you could actually, we see these in movies sometimes, but they're usually like dystopic films that don't have happy endings. All of that is, could potentially meet this new lower standard, which is just, the police have to show that there's a mere suspicion that the information might be useful to investigation. Let's see where everybody was in Ottawa for 5 hours before the crime. Let's just track their movements. We'll stick it into a computer. That the technology to do that is there or coming. So I mean, there's concerns about the mass surveillance capabilities that these lower standards packaged with these new technological recordings make possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the commercial companies, I mean, are clearly our cell phone providers. I mean, they know our location because they have to trace it based on what tower we're using and so on. So, I mean, there's clearly a lot of companies out there that are collecting this information. They often have to collect this information in for their technical infrastructure to work. Now, what's the problem here? I mean, so the information is already there. What's the problem with the police simply having access to it? I mean, it's not like the this legislation will be creating new data that's not there. Is that correct?
So there's two things. So definitely for functionality, for making getting your cell phone to work, cell phone companies do have to have some idea of your location, but it's usually a much less precise. Historically, it's been much less precise in the sense that the cell phone tower gives you sort of a rough estimate of where people are, depending on where you are in the city, how dense the towers are, and all that. With GPS, like embedded in the phones, that's becoming a lot more precise, and also the check-ins are a lot more frequent. So you have sort of a constant, a much more sort of complete picture of where everybody is. But there's other incentives kicking in that are getting telecommunications service provider record this stuff for longer and longer, just for their own commercial purposes, because that that location, that GPS location, has commercial value. They behavioral targeted advertising. Our advertisement is based on that, so they can sell that to advertisers. It's a valuable thing for them. So the amount of location information is becoming more prevalent. But so there's a lot of incentives that are for commercial companies to record, more and more of this stuff on their own. This legislation has certain orders that would allow police to force telecommunication service providers to keep, or anybody really, to keep information that they already have for longer periods of time with a court order. And there is a concern once various telecommunication service providers start getting these orders more and more frequently, and the time that they need to keep information for expands. So for an example, say I'm a phone company. I'm used to keeping your location data for 60 days, and then deleting my logs. If I start getting a lot of these are called preservation orders that are making me hold on to this for a lot of this information for 90 or 100 days, it might be easier for me to, instead of just doing one-off preservations for the specific type of data the police are asking, if they're asking for enough of it, I might just manually up my preservation period to 90, 100 days and start keeping more of that data on my own. So in this way, the law enforcement this legislation could have much broader impact than what's,
Or you might even put a software system in place that just allows the police to log in and look up the data, because in the commercial perspective, you're always trying to lower your costs. So sometimes that could be the most effective option, is just to make it as easy as possible. And I think that's where we actually get into the most dangerous waters here, is just when you kind of start to lose that separation between these commercial companies, which do have so much data on it, and then the state on the other hand, which has a large set of powers that the commercial side doesn't have. So when you get those two sides together, your broad public authority tied into this vast set of information that the commercial providers have.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely. I mean, we're talking. Aside from the, we're talking about, just from practical purposes, the commercial entity, pushing the, how long they're keeping data just to, to be more, better respond to these requests. But there's other elements to that, like you're saying. The commercial entity does get compensated for some types of requests for the processing. So for them, this is some of this is going to be a money-making exercise. There's going to be a real incentive to automate, like you're talking about, the request processes. As an example, a large ISP in the United States did set up a geolocation think it was even a web interface where law enforcement would get a login, would just log in. It might not have been a web interface, but would just log in remotely and say, oh, I want to know where this, you know, this person is. And, you know, the longitude and latitude would just get, you know, they would just get the results. And this fairly large ISP in the States has a subscriber base of about 50 million people, reported getting about 8 million electronic requests a hit on 10,000 of its customers, meaning that law enforcement were just basically following, you know, 10,000 people around. And again, you don't, without any need for any type of warrant or any need to actually have a reasonable suspicion that these people are doing anything wrong. I'm sure that it was probably tied to some investigation or other, but the potential for abuse there is very, very large. Even aside from automation and the efficiency incentives on commercial entities to, you know, tailor their practices to more efficiently meet what police needs are because they're responding to them more frequently. There is also this historically the role of a service provider is not to spy on its customers in order to help the police, but we're already seeing this to some extent, and this legislation is going to be a really big push in that direction. Once you have to respond to these types of requests, you basically have to set up a department that deals with law enforcement on a day-to-day basis, and you start forming sort of ties and connections, and just this culture of mutual assistance between the service provider and the law enforcement. So you're setting up a dynamic that it's, you know, now it's the, you know, the service provider and law enforcement working together against the customer base, which is really, again, something that, you know, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the proper role for a private company in a free and democratic society, where the company's role is to provide products and tailor products to its customer. Its loyalty should be to its customer, not to law enforcement, and these aren't roles that, you know, it should be carrying out. We have the police. We pay them to do their investigative roles. Private companies are private companies. They're not there as sort of an arm of the state to help spy on their customers.
Yeah, there's a reason we try to keep a separation between the state and commerce. Now, certainly the service providers generally already have most of this subscriber information and things like GPS location data, excuse me. But the bills also actually require them to expand their current capabilities too. I understand that the bills require service providers to have wiretap capabilities so that the police can actually monitor communication. Now, I'm just wondering, who do you think that will apply to? So the bill broadly says it applies to telecommunications service providers, but that seems to be larger than just your internet service provider. Who all do you think this will affect that has to have this wiretap capabilities?
So the legislation actually, as phrased, it could be... So there's two ways to answer that. So it's definitely intended. I think it's intended to capture people intrinsically linked to the telecommunications, to the provision of telecommunications service. That's going to be, I think that even that will catch more than I think the drafters of the bill have maybe thought through, which is in the sense that it's not just going to impact on, you know, large internet service providers or mobile service providers, but also on, it's also likely an impact on people operating, you know, public Wi-Fi networks in cities like Montreal, Ottawa, other cities in Canada that might also get hit with these requirements, and they might get deterred from doing this altogether. Also, as drafted, it could even it's not intended to, but the legislation might even be applied more broadly to services like Facebook and that kind of thing, which would also have really serious effects on their business models.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the last piece of legislation that came out, and the one coming out is likely to be the same. It has a schedule at the back with, you know, exemptions for certain coffee shops and so on. But I was looking at, I mean, I actually have my own server that I run a blog off of, and I see, you know, do I fit within those exceptions? And it wasn't actually clear that I'd be, you know, even having my own personal server, I'd fit within those exceptions. So certainly, I think a lot of the legislation should be clarified on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think some of the terms in there are phrased broad, so broadly that there's definitely a need for what we've been calling for just really careful consideration before we put this. A part of the problem is that this legislation was a lot of the thought around this legislation was done, you know, at the time of the cybercrime treaty 10 years ago, and then you know, during discussions, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. The government's been a bit slow in getting this legislation, you know, to the starting line. So I think a lot has changed, you know, in internet time. That's an era. A lot has changed, you know, online since then. And I think some of the, you know, just applying some of the concepts that formed the basis of the legislation, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, to the current internet environment is going to cause some serious problems that I don't think the government has necessarily thought through.
Yeah, and certainly there are a lot of challenges faced by law enforcement too these days that they haven't faced in the past. So, I mean, I think we do need some type of legislation. How do you think that legislation should look? How do you think these bills really fundamentally need to be changed, or the main things that need to be changed in them?
Well, certainly, I mean, you know, it's reasonable to have some sort of, I mean, we are living in a new environment, so it's reasonable to have some new powers that are, you know, catered to that. Like, for example, in emergency scenarios, if law enforcement need to find an IP address and don't have time to get a warrant, by all means, like, give them the power to go to an internet service provider and say, we really need to know who this is right now, or you know, someone's going to get hurt or whatever, like, you know, give them those powers. But, you know, make sure that there's a lot, even in those scenarios, make sure there's a lot of oversight in place. You know, we want to be able to track, there was just a report issued in the States, I think the FBI has similar powers, and the U.S. Department of Justice audited the FBI's use of these powers. And they found that, like, a very large percentage, I think more than half of the, so-called emergency requests or emergency situations that the FBI was using to justify the use of these powers were nothing close to emergency-like. There was no emergency involved. They were just using it to get around the actual requirement of getting a warrant, because, you know, for whatever reason, to save costs, or because they, you know, wanted to investigate someone that they really shouldn't be investigating. So a lot of oversight needs to be in place, even for those powers. Other powers, like, there should not be any warrantless. You know, you shouldn't be able to get someone's online identity without, you know, at least having a reason to think that they've done something wrong or that the information is going to be useful in some way. You know, a warrant requirement there would be not out of place. some of these other lower standards, like, we shouldn't be assuming that your location, particularly when it's in an online environment where you can have constant surveillance and automated requests and all this other stuff. We shouldn't be assuming that there's less privacy in that. I think there's more privacy in that. There should be higher standards for getting that information, not lower ones. Similarly, for other types of information, like your social network online, that's a much richer set of interactions than has been the case in the offline world. Information like that, you know, law enforcement are subject to making really, really mistaken judgments based on information like that. Maher Arar is a good example. You know, they linked him to one or two other questionable people because he had interacted with them in some way. He's been vindicated since, but he went through a really sort of awful process that we would hope to avoid for people by putting in the proper safeguards to make sure that, you know, this information isn't collected haphazardly. It's only collected when there is already a reason to think someone's done something wrong, or that, you know, there's a reasonable suspicion that type of information will be useful.
Yeah, so I guess we want the law enforcement to have the tools they need, but just want some checks and balances in place. So, you know, at least some minimum thresholds for being able to access personal information, and then also probably some broader checks and balances in terms of oversight requirements by non-law enforcement bodies, I think would be.
We definitely want to track how these powers are being used very, very carefully, and also put some checks on them. I mean, this is the problem with the legislation, and we see this a lot in you know, in technology and law enforcement, the tendency is just to expand and expand and expand the powers and never to expand the protections. So I think that's troubling just in general, because you're having a one-sided ramp up, and it's gonna keep ramping up, and the protections are never coming in place to match that ramp up. So the internet is a new environment, and it does pose new challenges. But if we're developing new powers for the internet, let's first have let's base them on empirically demonstrated need. So let's law enforcement, they've been asked but have not done so, if they can present scenarios where they're actually running into trouble, so maybe some new powers could be developed and tailored to those scenarios, again with a lot of safeguards. In the same time, we also need new privacy protections, because there's a lot more online data.
Well, sounds like some good advice, and hopefully your advice will make it way to make their way to the powers that be putting this legislation in place, and that we can have some substantive review on it before it becomes law. So thank you for joining us here, Tamir.
Sure. Just one more. So Kent, do you know if people are concerned about this, do you know where can they go to read more? What can they do?
So if our listeners are interested in this issue, there's a petition they can sign. You can find it at our website at www.sipic.ca. You'll find the link to it there, and you should check out our website too. We have a brand new one. You can also go to stopspying.ca. That's the actual site where the petition is itself. This is an important issue, so you should really sign the petition and make your thoughts known on it.
Thanks for having me on, Kent.
Thank you for coming with us, Tamir. And
thanks. Okay. Well.